Bye, everybody. And don't forget, it's Swift Control. No, I did that completely wrong. Goodbye, everybody. Oh, God, that sounds stupid. Okay, hold on.
The word is bye.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 3 of Swift Over Coffee. I'm Paul Hudson.
And I'm Erica Sadoun.
And in the last few weeks, Erica, I've paused from filing the massive avalanche of radars I was doing last time, and I'm back to releasing software again in the form of Control Room and Brisk, and even dabbling with Numorphism.
I'm not going to let you start talking about those things because you passed Control Room, and that's where all my interest lies, because Control Room is such a sweet piece of software. Tell people what this is.
So it's a wrapper for SimCTL, which comes with Xcode for handling the simulator being controlled through the command line.
Or, as normal people call it, SimControl.
Oh, okay, you call it SimControl.
Yes, that's a normal, natural thing to call it. It's SimControl.
Well, no, you know, as now the person who owns this repository handling SimCTL, I'm telling you, as the authority on SimCTL, its answer is SimCTL.
Okay, so tell me, sir, what does CTL stand for?
Obviously control, but it's still CTL. It's right there in the thing.
Can't talk live?
Oh, well, never mind. We'll edit that in some sort of magic, I'm sure.
But Control Room is seriously cool. It is such a beautiful addition. It takes all those things that you would normally have to just dive into man pages, or I guess it's dash help these days, and try to figure out on your own, and it just brings it right there and gives you a beautiful GUI. And if you go into the code...
No. It gives you a beautiful what?
It is not a GUI.
You call me out on saying CTL.
It's a graphical user interface. That's what GUI stands for.
You said GUI.
A GUI is something you step in and then you make a face and then you excuse yourself and you clean your shoe.
We need an open mind for next time. How do you pronounce these things? It's Paul Wright, it's GUI, and it's SimCTL. So you think both would be like SimControl and GUI, or SimCTL and GUI?
No.
And we're on opposite sides of the same thing.
CTL is short for control. GUI is an initialism of graphic user interface. And anyway, you're getting away from the really good part, which is if you look at the code for this.
Yes.
It is just... really nice code. I was sitting there and going through your Swift UI interfaces for each of the screens, and I was going, this is just lovely. They're like little sonnets. No, haikus. They're more like haikus than sonnets, although some of them are 10 lines.
Well, that's mostly Dave DeLong, I expect. He did a lot of work helping clean up the code and make it better. Also, to be fair, Swift UI does force you, because it's a Swift UI macOS app. So UI makes you think in small, composable segments. But the nice thing is, whether it is grim code or lovely code, SimCTL, as I'm now definitely calling it from now on forever and ever, regardless of what the vote comes in as, it is a wonderful tool. It's been there for a long time for doing things like setting the clock on your simulators or installing apps or whatever you want to do. And it gets more and more powerful. Like in Xcode 11.4, you can now switch between light mode and dark mode. You can now send push notifications, test ones, and that. So effectively, it's been a brilliant tool, which is very, very hard to use because it's on the command line to be able to discover all the options and stuff. And SimCTL is lovely, but Control Room wraps it in this Swift UI GUI. I say these words to annoy you now. But it means that you can now see everything right there. How do I set the user's test location? How do I send some example JSON? How do I set the clock? How do I control carrier strength and Wi-Fi strength? Right there in a Swift UI GUI, and it's way, way easier. And it's a new project, so it'll evolve further and further and further, but it's happening. Anyway, so I've been doing code, lots of code, and then some more code. What have you been up to?
Well, part of my time has been doing taxes, and part of my time has been trying to get my computers all set with Catalina. And you can imagine which one was the more enjoyable.
I'm one of those really horrible groups that has absolutely no problems with Catalina.
I have come to loathe Catalina so hard. The great thing about Catalina is it made my taxes seem enjoyable by comparison. Now it's time for the news. And first up, we have a really cool survey that has come out, iOS Dev Survey. Paul, tell us about it.
So this is, you can tell by the name Dev right there in the name. This is one of Dave Verwer's projects, iOS Dev Weekly, iOS Dev Jobs, iOS Dev Survey, iOS Dev Directory. So you can tell immediately Dev is one of Dave's things, unhelpfully named.
Unless, of course, he calls it iOS DEV Survey.
DEV?
Yes, like CTL.
Anyway, so this is actually, the largest ever independent survey of iOS developers, asking them stacks of questions. I mean, it was a sizable survey, but it was comprehensive. And I think that was one of Dave's goals, was to make sure lots of bases are covered, from personal usage of watchOS to professional use of CocoaPods, how you make your money on the App Store, and all sorts of things. And the results are now out, and he's released them all as raw data and as nice charts. And more importantly, I think, has gone a step further and started providing analysis, saying, on this particular thing here, here's why I think these results are interesting.
And what's nice is that you can go through these results and figure out what's working, what needs some improvement, and what's kind of broken.
Yeah. So a few things I think jumped out at me as being particularly interesting, and in particular the career section, how we thought our careers were going with Apple development and where it might go in the future. For example, one of the questions was, how do you rate your satisfaction with Apple platform development right now? And the average out of 10, where 10 is very satisfied and 1 is very dissatisfied, the average was 7.4, which is really good. The highest rating was an 8 out of 10. You know, that is fairly well satisfied with Apple platform development, which is, I think, a great sign Apple are on the right track and the major revamps in iOS 13 have got folks excited again.
I think another one of the things that we found in the survey was the wonderful feeling people have about the Swift community and its supportiveness in learning. You see in one of the sections, they ask about how well does the community support each other in discovery and learning and so forth. And the numbers are really brilliant on those.
Yeah, so I think 79% of people said that the community makes it easy for them to learn iOS development. And about the same number said it's easy to learn Swift with the community, which is great. It means that as a group, we are supporting folks in advancing their learning with Swift and iOS. The numbers were significantly lower, however, for Apple. 45% of people said that Apple makes it easy for them to learn iOS, and 55% saying Apple makes it easy for them to learn Swift. So it's a very, very big gap between how folks feel supported from the community and how they feel supported from Apple.
I think another interesting part of this whole thing is where you dive into specific, what I would call specialty topics, like machine learning or augmented reality and so forth, and see what among the general Swift community do the developers see as areas of particular interest. And surprisingly enough, whether it's machine learning or augmented reality or even Mac development, there's not much of an interest or a pickup there. It's still very much an iOS world.
Oh, it was huge. I mean, this has been a long-standing thing. We all know that AR is going to be huge at some point, but it's just not today. And we'd like it to be huge. We all download an app and go, wow, this is really cool, and then get bored of it and never touch it again. We might dabble around with it a little bit and then get bored with it and never touch it again. But that's going to change at some point, just not yet. So there were some places where you're like, well, that's not really a huge surprise. But hopefully folks can look at these numbers and say, yes, I can take something from this and actually apply it to transform their business or their app ideas, how they approach revenue, for example. There's lots of good revenue numbers in there, how much your app makes, how much you've made, or how you price stuff. So get ideas from here, you know, dig through the numbers, find the bits you care about, and see you can learn from them.
I think the biggest thing out of the survey that really struck me was developer tools. People love their tools these days. And that hasn't always been the case. You know, cursing Xcode and the people who create the dev tools has sort of been part of our culture for so long that it's just undergone this huge turnaround. We've come to really like the tools that we're working with in a way that was unthinkable, 10 years ago.
But there is some good news on the developer tools front, because something big shipped on macOS.
I don't know if you would call it big, but it definitely shipped. It is Swift Playgrounds for iOS is now brought to you on Catalina, thanks to Catalyst. And this is the same application that is intended for teaching primarily to, I would say, ages 10 through 18, although I believe some of these things do go into college, but it's really an educational system for teaching people how to code.
Well, I think it's big and not big. And the reason I say it's not big is because literally it's tiny. The download is 155 megabytes. When you think about the minimum 4 gigs of Xcode, often significantly more, that's the smallest way to get Swift on your Mac to work with. Because you get Swift, you get code completion, you get syntax highlighting, you get SceneKit, SpriteKit, Swift UI, you get Combine, you get UIKit, you get absolutely everything.
Would you actually use this? Have you found a way to use it? Because I find it kind of a little irritating.
So the reason I think it's big is because it provides us with the more powerful Playground format, Playground Books. Playground Books are a more advanced playground. They're not Xcode playgrounds. They're a wrapper on top of that to do more functionality. And you can do things like hide this code and have some code they can't see or edit running on the page. And then you can send data over to the live view directly and get data back again. It's really, really well done. So it's really a great step forward for education, because it fills that gap between I've got an iPad and the next step is I've got Xcode. It's a nice middle ground of you can build powerful tools that are in between Xcode, in between Swift Playgrounds for iPad on your Mac. So that's very, very good. But it's annoying because it's still a Catalyst app and it feels like one in places, despite extensive work from the team. Things like, you know, modal popovers that struggle in dark mode, things like tiny fonts, like really blurry tiny fonts in places. I've actually filed a radar about that. The fonts are too small in places. So it has some annoyances, but this is the very first version, and I think it's going to encourage them to invest more in Catalyst, do better with Catalyst, and build this into a better product over time.
When you buy into Swift Playgrounds, you are buying into a very slick, highly organized system for pedagogy. And when you do that as an author, you kind of have to adopt Apple's way of doing things. There's not a lot of ways to create your own look, feel, style, and teaching methods. So I find it very constraining. It is not an area that I've spent a significant amount of time investing into once I learned what it was and how to do it. So I don't know how positive I am about it becoming and growing this great educational experience.
There's one more thing I want to throw in here before we move on, which is that easily my favorite thing about Swift Playgrounds for macOS is that they've shipped all the same everyone can code curriculum. You know, the little bite happy alien thing moving around, collecting gems, yada, yada, yada. That's there on macOS. And you can right click on it, choose Show in Finder, and go through all their Swift code. And there's thousands and thousands and thousands of lines of very, very nice Swift code. They've put a lot of thought into it, a lot of documentation, a lot of extensibility. So go and look at their code, because Apple does not get many lines of Swift code out there, bluntly. They do mostly Objective-C internally. So go and look, go and thieve, go and get ideas.
So next up, let's move to something that I find really exciting, which is the diagnostics engine rewrite is pretty much done for Swift. And any of you who have dealt in the past with cryptic error messages and diagnostic information that seems to be, you know, from Xcode when it's been drinking too much or taking LSD, a lot of that is now getting fixed.
Yeah, so I was always okay with I was comfortable with unhelpful error messages. I saw some horrors in my time. There's one using actual Greek letter alphabets in the error messages. It's real horrors. I was used to that. But with Swift UI, we saw a whole new world of actually misleading error messages. can't convert into CG float or something. I'm like, what? That's not, that line's fine. And it wasn't you. It was just Swift completely misdiagnosing. So from what I understand, they've rewritten the error generation system, the diagnostics engine, to be significantly better. And it is so good. It is so, so good.
And this work has been going on for quite some time. It's coming up on 5 or 6 months worth of us following this process, knowing that at the end of the line, we were going to get some reasonable diagnostics. And it has finally happened. It is all out there. And if you want, you can read about the process, the kind of errors, like the crazy CG float ones. I love those from, you know, Swift UI. But now they've gone through, they've really worked through so many details of where there were weaknesses, where the diagnostics either were uninformative, or they were giving incorrect information, or they just were pulling your leg for some reason. They've taken that all and they've redone everything as a system of constraints. They're looking at the context of things. They're tying variables to where their declarations are and so forth. So the output now is much more informative, and it is just an absolute wonderful step forward. And it's something that this week I am really excited about.
Yeah, and so for folks who aren't quite sure, this is shipping in Swift 5.2, which you can get now in the Xcode 11.4 beta. Download it and try it out. Now, what I'd actually recommend you do is get the 5.2 toolchain for your current Xcode from swift.org. I find that better because right now, honestly, I do this every single day, and I encourage listeners to do it as well. Go through, do your code, build, you get an unhelpful error message. Just change your tool chain to Swift 5.2, build it again. It'll say, that's the error right there. You fix it, go back to the old tool chain and stick with what you're doing. And that way you can ship apps, but get all the helpful stuff now. It will guarantee definitely help you fix bugs faster and identify problems faster. It's so, so good.
And now it's the time when we do picks, which is apparently something that we find interesting or something that we've learned. And I'm going to let Paul do his pick, which may be more than one pick, if I am sensing this correctly.
There are definitely more than one picks this time because there's so much pickiness happening in the world right now. So the first pick I have is the new Cocoa Hub app from Pedro Carrasco. I've been using this since the early test flight builds, but it's finally out on the App Store now. And it actually won one of the categories in the Swift Community Awards from last year because it's a really, really nice app for presenting news about Swift, Cocoa, UIKit, and similar on your iOS device. So Pedro has done a really, really great job. It's a free app. Go and check it out in the App Store.
Well, that sounds pretty impressive. Tell me more about it. Is it open source? Is it closed source? What's the deal?
I don't think it's open source. I think it's closed source, which is a bit of a shame because there are things I'd like to see change, and I'd happily do it myself, quite frankly. But maybe Pedro's listening. Perhaps he can do it for us. Actually, I would say that, Pedro, one thing I'd like to see change is you don't have Swift over coffee in your podcasts. It's just like, what are you doing? And here's me featuring you as a pick, you know. Anyway, so it's a little bit empty right now. You know, there isn't a lot of content in there moving through. Mm-hmm. But it's a start, of course. And because there isn't much in there, there's no way to customize what you see. You just sort of see everything because there isn't a lot in there, which is a shame because there are some things I know I am never going to care about this or whatever. I want to mute stuff, you know, the same way I do on Twitter, block this or mute that, whatever it is. You can't do that yet. So it'd be nice to see more content going through so I can start to cherry pick the bits I actually care about, the areas of the Swift community I want to see more of, for example. So perhaps version 2, it's early days. Mm-hmm.
So let me summarize this. Really good, solid bones, but it has not been customized enough for Paul.
It hasn't got our podcast, Erica.
I know, that's broken. But you had a second pick.
I do, yeah. So like I said earlier, I've been releasing lots of code right now. So much source code has been leaving my machine finally. And one thing I've been working on for a while is a way to make scripting easier in Swift. Because for a long time, I've basically had this massive file of helper functions and extensions and similar. So I wanted to do a new quick script. I'd basically copy and paste in those extensions, write my code, and then save it away and run that thing. And that worked when I had 20 or 30 of these things. But over time, it expands and evolves. I change things. So now I ended up with these various broken copies of different versions of the same helper library scattered around different files on my Mac, which is a disaster. So I started looking at ways to build modules or build a new framework system from 5.1 and ended up with a new idea entirely, which I've called Brisk, which is fast like Swift with an element of risk. See, the name is clever. It's clever. Anyway, it's a way to do scripting with Swift. So rather than having filemanager.current.changeCurrentDirectoryPath2, you just say chdir, the standard POSIX call. Lots of places where you use try catch, you just don't, because if you've screwed it up, you screwed it up. You've made a mistake. Like if you've put in a bad regex, put a bad regex in, you know, same thing that Python would do or JavaScript or Ruby, there's no try catch. You just print an error saying you had a bad regex, you monkey, do it again. So that's what it does. It sort of, it keeps all of Swift's functionality like extensions and protocols and type safety and all that good stuff, of course, performance, but overlays Foundation, it wraps Foundation with a great number of helpers that are common for scripting. What's in this directory? Make that directory. Give me this file contents, whatever. Things that were annoying in Swift scripting have become slightly easier.
It sounds pretty terrific, other than your broken pronunciation of regex. Regular expression.
Well, that's for next week. We can't have all these fights all at once, Eric.
Can I help it if you can pronounce things?
So my pick this week really isn't Brisk, because Brisk, I made that. It's not really fair to self-promote. But my pick is how annoying scripting is with Swift, how hard it is. And it doesn't need to be, because what I want to do is, you know, create a file called hello.swift, open in Xcode and start typing. But you can't do that because you don't get code completion in Xcode without a project behind it. You can't have code completion for single files. And you can't build or run from there because it'll go, well, what's Foundation? I don't know what Foundation is. Well, how do you not know what Foundation is? It's everywhere. There's no built-in system module approach. So you can't have your own modules you put somewhere else, just like you'd have with Python. There's no way of importing someone else's Swift source code. Well, there's a dodgy hacky version, but no official way of doing it to say, import this file into here. And it's these things should kind of just work in Swift 5.1, quite frankly, and they really don't.
And this is a really good reason why you shouldn't be doing scripting in Swift, because even though it allows you to, what you really should be doing is doing a command line application, which is compiled and gives you all your libraries and, you know, the places that they belong, so you don't end up with 20 different versions of them. And you can just use code completion, you can test and run, and then you throw it into your bin.
But there's a lot of hassle for that. You've got to make a new Xcode project, put your code in there somewhere, like import it using SPM or copy and paste it, whatever you want to do. And you don't want to think about that. You just want to say, give me my thing, get going, please. Ideally, import my module from somewhere else in the Mac, and you can't do that. And even if you fight your way through all these things, even then, you still get the annoying macOS, can it access your desktop prompts that you wouldn't get in Python, because Terminal would say, give me full system access to, and it just figures it out. If I'm building and running my code from Xcode, I'd like to think I could say, just trust me, I know what I'm doing for this particular binary. Leave me alone, please, macOS. So it's painful, and Brisk was about removing as much of that pain as possible, giving you things you care about, giving you type safety and code completion and all that nice stuff, without being in your face of making your Xcode project, choose command line, copy in your code, da, 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 da. I just want a quick script to run, and it was painful, and it's less painful now, I think.
I am happy for your less pain.
Anyway, so that's my pick. What are your picks?
Well, my pick is why you should not let your Catalina beta fester to the point where the release version of Catalina overtakes it, because I got into this rhythm where it would come up on my screen and it would say, you know, sweetie, it's time for you to upgrade your Catalina. And I would say, oh, thank you. You are so kind. Remind me tomorrow. and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, to the point where when I was ready to upgrade because I wanted to use Swift Playgrounds, I was stuck on beta 1 and I couldn't upgrade. And it took me a half a day to reinstall the original version of, you know, the App Store version of Catalina, then re-enter the beta program and then install the beta, because each of these things takes an hour or more at a time.
So it sounds like, Erica, what you're saying here is you only have yourself to blame.
Yes, this is completely on me.
Yeah. Adding this to your list of mistakes alongside SimCTL and GUI.
GUI is correct. And Sim Control is correct as well.
Folks, we record these podcasts using Skype, and I can see Erica's reaction here. And she looks like she's talking to a small child as she explains how to pronounce GUI to my face. Oh, we should do one of these by video one of these days, because it's so true.
Oh, man.
She's speaking slowly and loudly to me, so it's not to get me angry.
But gently.
Yeah. So I had Catalina Beta 1 as well. I was there at DubDub and I had my only MacBook Pro, and I'm like, I have to have Swift UI now. I put it on there, and of course, during the install, the whole thing goes black. I see a wall of text, command line text. The installer had a problem resizing my partition. I'm like, no, it was the worst time to lose everything on my Mac. Rebooted, it picked up, and it's been good ever since. And like I said, I'm one of those really annoying folks that have had no problems with Catalina. It works really, really well. I think you have all my Catalina bugs, so good luck to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for giving those to me. I treasure them.
So I had two picks, which of course is deeply unfair, unless you also have two picks. So give me a second pick, Erica.
My second pick is Joe Groff's Twitter feed. And if you are not following this, you really do need to be following his Twitter feed. It is more or less guaranteed to put a smile on my face on a near daily basis. And when there's not really hilarious puns, there are pictures of proper corgis, not dorgies, but corgis. And of course, it is Paul who taught me the difference.
Are they corgis? Pomeranians.
Are they Pomeranians? Oh my gosh, I screwed that up completely. I'm so sorry.
Where's my list of Erica mistakes? Let me add that one to the thing. Can't tell dogs apart. SimCTL, GUI, carry on.
They're small and yappy. Doesn't that make them automatically a corgi?
Actually, they featured in a quiz I had. I had a Swift Christmas quiz like 2 or 3 years ago. And one of them was to which of these names are actually the names of his dogs. They feature his feed so often. Which of these are the names of his dog? And the answer was Gummy Bear and Tansy.
I'm scared that you know the names of these.
He's got 3 now, by the way. And they're really sweet. They're really cute.
They are lovely and fluffy and doggy.
No. You've called them yappy now. That's it. So let's move on to our open ballot. And this time the question was, apart from async await, what new feature would you most like to see in Swift 6? And to start off with, we had a few answers here about Swift Package Manager, or SPM. Antoine van der Lee, who has a great site full of Swift tutorials, Swiftly, said, I'd love to see better support for installing Swift Package Manager CLI packages. I'm now using Mint from Jonas Kolb, who does amazing work, by the way, which does a trick, but having an easy built-in way would make adoption a lot easier. And Florent Morin said he also wants improvements for SPM like binary support, resources, and more. So yes, having SPM powered up would be an amazing, amazing thing. And actually, I saw a evolution draft proposal going through talking about having support for Swift scripts in SPM. So there's so much more they can do with this. I'd love to see it evolve and evolve further and become really, really powerful.
There's an interesting Swift Package Manager proposal that I think it's in review right now. Even though it's Swift Package Manager, it actually goes through the Swift Evolution proposal review process. They kind of combine together. But it's really nice to see Swift Package Manager continue to grow, evolve, and so forth. And one day it will take on the other package managers and conquer the world.
Yeah, so right now you still need CocoaPods, right? It's required. If you want to have resources in your module, your framework, you've got to use Carthage or CocoaPods, which is annoying because SPM would like to see a standard built into Xcode. It's going to work everywhere. It's pointy clicky in Xcode. It's a much, much nicer way of working. So it'd be nice to sort of centralize on one thing rather than having multiple other package managers sort of competing. And I've seen places where they have two package managers running for their workspace, and that's not that uncommon, I think. So it's confusing. I'd like to see that improve.
I now have a third pick. My pick.
What? No. It's been a gun.
No. Really. I need a t-shirt that says pointy clicky Xcode.
That's what I want, really. In fact, I was watching, I don't want to, it's not really fair to take pot shots at specific people, but he's my friend, so I'm sure he won't mind. I was rewatching recently, as part of my scripting hassle, the Dub talk from last year about module stability in Swift 5.1, which is a great feature. It's an amazing, amazing work. And I wanted to understand how you make the new XE frameworks. And it was Harlan Haskins doing the talk. It was his first Dubbub talk. He did a really smooth, slick, interesting presentation about these frameworks. And it was, I get it. There's many, many steps, though. Like, I get what you've got to do. You've got to do this, then do this, then run this command, then run this command. Da-da-da. And eventually, you get your thing. And it was like, wow. If anything was crying out for a significantly easier pointy-clicky Xcode, it's that, because it was running this command, then this command, da, da, da. Oh my goodness, it was hard. Anyway, we had some answers here about frameworks. One here from Richard L. Zarfa III saying, it's not exactly a Swift 6 feature, but seeing an updated version of core data, Swift data would be great.
That's actually a really good one. It's something that so many people either depend on core data, or they think it's just, what's a nice way of saying garbage?
Suboptimal.
Suboptimal in terms of its current implementation. It's something that has been with us a very long time. It's something that really could use some revolutionizing. Does it belong under the Swift umbrella, though? I'm not sure, but other things have.
So I think it does because, you know, watching Swift evolve to make Swift UI work, you know, the number of things that went in, accepted or rejected, like the style guide, like eliding commas, like property wrappers, like all these things, function builders, da da da, update return types, they all went in there to make, or tried to go in there to make Swift UI work. And they were literally evolving the language while building the framework, which must have been very difficult to do internally, but we didn't see that from the outside. They could do the same thing for core data. What would it look like to have a Swift UI equivalent of core data? And it might be entirely possible using the current Swift. But if Apple say, hey, you know, to do this, we'll have to add A, B, and C features for Swift, maybe those are worth investigating. So yes, a Swift 6 feature for me very much could be, what language changes would we need to make really good tools like core data fit in with Swift and feel really natural with Swift. Moving on here, we had some answers about real power features. This is why I'm so glad to have Erica on the show, because she loves this kind of thing. We had an answer here from Javi Soto saying he wants to see generalized existentials, and Natanel Niazov said variadic generics. Over to you, Erica.
Both of them are on the roadmap, so I don't see that they wouldn't show up at some point. The question is, are they going to make the cut into Swift 6? And I wouldn't be surprised to see either of them just show up. So maybe.
So it's wonderful watching Doug Greger work right now, because he's doing some, he has done for years, since for a very long time, right? It's not a new thing. But recently, over the last sort of 9-12 months, he's been doing extraordinary work to build things that completely rethink the way we understand Swift. And Doug will be first in line to say it's not him, it's a team effort. Of course it is, but you know, often his name is attached to the merges or the reviews and similar. So I'm using Doug as my example, I guess. And for example, right now he's tearing apart function builders and doing extraordinary work there, so you can have you know, local variables inside function builders, which would be huge for Swift UI. And he's working towards adding things like switch inside function builders, again, for Swift UI. So we're seeing some really big power features. And I know things like variadic generics are entirely on his radar or his team's radar and will get addressed because that will definitely help Swift UI. As for generalized existentials, yes, of course, it's going to happen at some point. Will it be Swift 6? I don't know. Something's got to give. You remember Swift 3? Well, you remember it because you kind of caused half of it. But so it was a problem because there were a lot of things being crammed to a release. And Swift 6, we haven't got a release date for, but I'm imagining dub 21, more or less. They can't do everything for there. And I want to see variadic generics. I want to see the new improved function builder ship. I want to see async await. We've kind of banned that one because it was a gimme, as you'd say. I want to see improved SPM. So lots of things I want to see, and generalized existentials are really cool, but I'd happily pump them to Swift 7.
Yeah, but now I sort of want to see Swift data.
Yeah, totally.
I'm sold.
And one to end on, Daryl Root says, what I like most about Swift is I can wrap my head around most of the language. So I'll cast my vote for slowing down new features. Swift must never end up like C++.
I don't think that's really a problem. I have seen a massive intentional focusing of the language. And I don't think it's gotten too frilly around the edges. But I do think that's a really significant concern. Especially when you compare, for example, Swift to Kotlin. Kotlin has never seen an extension that it didn't love. And it just grows and grows and grows. Where Swift tends to be a lot more focused about not only what it picks to move forward, but the extent of it. Trying to keep that core language fairly narrowly focused.
I think it's quite common to see folks, particularly when a new Swift version lands, like 5.2 or 5.1, folks complaining, saying Swift has already become like C++. And to them, I always think exactly the same thing. Have you used C++ recently? Because I remember doing a lot of C++ and finding it nightmarishly hard in places and a bit confused as well. I know it has improved significantly since then because you have, you know, type inference if you want it and similar. But it's still a deeply broken language in places. So I would encourage folks to say, yeah, Swift's just like C++. Go back and write me that UIKit app in C++. Then come back and you'll be so happy to be in the warm embrace of Swift once again.
Normally, this is the time where we introduce our next open ballot, but this week we're going to do something slightly different. Paul and I have been talking and scheming, and right now you can't see it, but Paul is doing the villain hand thing that you see Mr. Burns do on The Simpsons. And our idea is this. We want to issue, instead of an open ballot, a challenge, and it's a coding challenge. And the idea is that this gives us and you an opportunity just to kind of test ourselves against something which is a cool little code challenge. And what we picked for this is replicating the animation on the watch for the Breathe app. It's the set of blue circles, they open up to a flower and they close back up.
And you can solve this challenge using any tools you want that are Swifty. So you can use Swift Playgrounds, Xcode Playgrounds, build an iOS app, build a macOS app, build a watchOS app. I don't really mind. Erica sort of minds, just don't call it GUI. And you can do whatever you want, but there are a handful of rules you've got to follow if you want to build this app and submit your challenge. The first of which is you have no more than an hour. Just 1 hour. So you've got to get in, solve the problem, and get out. So it's not a long, labored process. Just have fun and experiment for 1 hour and see what you can build. The second thing is share what you've made. Send us a link, post it on GitHub, tell your friends on Twitter, whatever you want to do. Just share your content somehow so folks can see your code and review your code and give you feedback on the code and you learn more that way. What I would say is we want to feature the most interesting entries. So tell us what you've built and be creative. You can do an exact clone if you want to. You could do it in metal. You could add 3D. I don't know what. Be creative. Tell us the problems you faced, how they were solved. Give us a link to your GitHub and we'll feature the best here.
And, you know, we may not finish. Because something that simple, often you start going into the code and then you realize, oh, well, I need this thing to support it. I need this thing to support it, which is one of the nice things about having a time limit. It forces you to use the tools you have immediately on hand. And I have a suspicion that you are just going to go straight SwiftUI.
Oh yeah, totally. I'm already mentally solving it in SwiftUI.
Whereas I've been thinking of it in layers.
Oh, CA layers.
Yeah, CA layers. I mean, that's what I would normally reach for. Maybe I should try to do it in SwiftUI, but I don't know if I could complete it.
We'll find out in about 2 weeks. Anyway, that's the end of our show. Please leave a review in the podcasts app. We appreciate every single one. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, everyone.